This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Matt Chan is a former CrossFitter, still CrossFits, but by himself. But you know his name because he was in the arena with the Rich Fronings of the world. He attended the CrossFit Games 6 times, came second twice, and today is a firefighter in Denver, Colorado. I wanted to talk to Matt because, again, he's a big influencer. He's got a big community that follows him. And he's okay telling that community that he hunts. I first saw that he was hunting in the high country of Colorado for mule deer this year. I killed a nice bull elk. And naturally, I just wanted to reach out and just say, hey, Matt, would you like to have a conversation about hunting? I'd love to expose our community to who you are and what you do and why you love to hunt. So here's the conversation. If you like this conversation, give it a rating, give it a review, and most importantly, share it with your friends across social media. It's the one way that we can communicate who we are, what our heart is made out of, and what hunting is doing for people, communities, and wildlife all over the world. So enjoy.
So there's a reason why I started Blood Origins. And that reason is simple. Is that I wanted to convey the truth about hunting.
It brings awareness to non-hunters that it's more than just killing animals.
How do I start it? Brittany.
My name.
Does my hair look okay?
It's fantastic.
My name is Mike Axelrod.
Start again.
Yeah, I hated it too.
Braxton, you said something in the car to me. You said that you were living on borrowed time. Hmm.
There's a perception around who hunters are, what we're supposed to be, and a feminist that works for a nonprofit that is a hunter that has only eaten wild game for the last 20 years is likely not the thing that people think about when it comes to a hunter.
So we're just saying, friend of ours, I actually asked Rich, I said, Rich, how's your relationship with Matt Chan? Because I don't know, like when I went and visited Rich and sat with him and embedded with him, I'm not a CrossFit guy, okay? I have done WODs in the past. I have never been in a CrossFit gym except for when I went to Rich, in which then we trained 4 times in 1 day. And I said, I can't remember the last time I've trained 4 times in a week.
That makes 2 of us.
and I don't know, like, rivalries, right? There's certain camps in CrossFit, and you know, you guys are huge competitors, obviously. And so I asked Rich, I said, hey Rich, I'm going to talk to Matt on the podcast, and I have an idea for you and Rich. We can talk about this after the podcast. I said, "You're good mates?" He's like, "Oh yeah, man. He backed me." I can't remember the terminology. He backed me in the Leadville. And so he's like, "Yeah, we're good mates."
We definitely competed against each other at one point in time, but in reality, you know, that was a long time ago, 2010 through 2013. That's when I was still in it competing against him. But since then, you know, we've just been nothing but friends. And there's still a competitive aspect to certain parts of our relationship, I'm sure. But, you know, I'd like to provide him with as much support as possible. So, like, doing the crewing for the Leadville 100 was kind of a way that I could help him out in something that I've done in the past. And
you've done the Leadville?
I have, yeah. And just be there for him as his support to hopefully see him achieve his goals. And, you know, hopefully that connects us in another way.
Oh, and obviously you both now are hunters.
Yeah, yep.
Kindred spirits.
Yeah, definitely. And I would definitely like to connect with him in the future doing some of the stuff. You know, there is a difference, obviously, from how he hunts to how I hunt. I don't do any of the media stuff. So obviously traveling around with an entourage of cameras and stuff like that would be an adjustment. You know, it's not something that I'm opposed to, but it's certainly different than my experience. My experience is generally I go with one, maybe two people at the most. We're generally out there pretty remote in the backcountry, you know, doing archery hunts for elk. And most of the days are dead silent, just hanging out, taking naps in the woods, not entertaining a camera crew, you know. He's good at it, though. I mean, he's certainly good at it.
Well, you know, he's trying to, you know, he's left CrossFit competitively now. And now, when we spoke to each other, I asked him, so what now is replacing it? And hunting is that replacement. Hunting is that competition in him. And obviously, there's a business side to hunting, and he's trying to tap into that business side of hunting.
Yeah.
Interestingly enough, his first elk, I think, if I remember correctly, took him 29 days over 3 years.
Well, I mean, isn't that true for everybody, honestly?
100%.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah, and that's something I was thinking about leading up to talking to you is, you know, this is something that does not come easy for anybody. And there's a accumulation of skill sets that takes years to accomplish. You know, I think it's easy to look at hunting and become overwhelmed with the amount of tasks, the amount of gear, the amount of skill sets that you need to even go on your first hunt. And, you know, I have friends that have been collecting points in Colorado for a number of years who spent minimal days out in the backcountry. And now that they're ready to draw in the next couple of years, they're like, "Send me a list." And when they see... And when they see the list, it's like that you're talking about like $3,000 worth of gear before you buy a tag, before you spend the days in the backcountry. And it's like, oh, that's just the things you can buy. You can't buy skills. So, you know, it can be overwhelming, but, you know, in my experience, I've only been hunting for 10 years. It's changed my life 100%. It's changed my life. Every fall, September is hashtag September. Like, this is, I look forward to it every single year. I look forward to the disappointment. I look forward to the highs, the lows, and it's changed my life.
Well, Matt Chan, welcome to the Blood Origins podcast. I know we've been trying to get this situated for a while, and September hit in between us getting together, and you're like, "Look, dude, just reach out to me at the end of October." I was like, 2.5 months from now, I'll make a note and I'll reach out.
Yeah, thanks for doing that.
Matt Chan, if people don't know who you are, you want to give a quick introduction to who you are?
Sure. I would say I kind of classify myself as a firefighter now, you know, as far as like what I do for a living. I have competed in CrossFit for nearly, I think I went to the CrossFit game 6 times. I took second place in 2012, just after Rich Froning. And he and I went head to head that year for the whole competition. I taught with CrossFit for 12 years on their level 1 and level 2 seminar staff. I created a course for them called the CrossFit Competitors Course. I run a program called Training for the Win. and it's now a longevity program that uses science-based protocols to get people where they want to go, more comfortable in the backcountry, more comfortable at work. But I'd say my true heart is in the backcountry, whether it's skiing, mountain biking, climbing, or hunting. And my wife and I do a lot of that stuff together. And that is a big part of me, is my relationship with my wife and having those experiences with each other in the backcountry. So I feel
like— Does your wife hunt?
She does. Yeah, she does. We've yet to get her in an animal, but we're taking our time with it and making sure everything's comfortable. We're not rushing anything.
And she is bow hunting, rifle hunting.
Rifle hunting.
Good. So obviously, you mentioned 10 years ago is when you started hunting. You were obviously doing the backcountry stuff, the skiing, the snowboarding, the hiking before you entered into the hunting world?
Yeah. For about 20 years, I've been spending time in more and more remote places, generally in Colorado, but around the Western U.S.
So why? Why then do you become a hunter? Obviously, you were not a hunter. Didn't grow up a hunter, right?
Nope. Went for a few days with some friends, dove hunting and stuff like that. But I didn't grow up in a hunting family. So, you know, access was pretty limited to when my friends would ask me to go. And even
Mom
then,
and dad just didn't hunt? Or dad didn't?
No, both are hippies. And yeah. And they aren't guns people, you know, they're not gun toting, you know, so firearms and stuff like that were foreign to me growing up. But, you know, spending time with the people that I spend time with, I just started to develop an interest. And I spent a few weeks with a guy named Shane Dorian, who's a big wave surfer.
Bow hunter out of Hawaii. Yeah, for sure.
Correct. Yeah. I was introduced to him through a mutual sponsor, and we spent some time hunting hogs on the Big Island.
Amazing.
Yeah, pretty cool. And, you know, that kind of lit my wick a little bit to dive a little further into it. And every year I've picked up a few new skills, started rifle hunting, you know, just a few years ago, and really I'm enjoying all aspects of hunting, especially the meat.
100%. It's interesting that you said earlier, you know, the whole tag system and drawing a tag and the points, and
it's another skill set.
Yeah, it's a different skill set, of course, like the computer skill set and units and whatnot. But you made a thing that I don't think anyone actually talks about, which is 10, 13 years of putting in for points. You're sacrificing hunting those years to get to that one opportunity.
Well, patience.
Yet you're not gathering all the skills that you need to ensure that when that opportunity arrives, to capitalize on it.
Yep. Yeah, you know, luckily enough, I live in Colorado where the over-the-counter tag system is readily available, so you can collect preference points and still hunt each year. And I know out of state people, unless you're, you know, doing pretty well financially, that can be a reach for a lot of people.
100%.
And collecting preference points for your big hunt is the route you kind of have to go. But there are a lot of opportunities out there for people to pursue while they're accumulating those points and those skill sets. Like, example, the last 2 years, I picked up a tag in Montana for a cow elk in the late season, and it's only $300. And yeah, it takes some money to get there and to take the time off of work and all of that. But I do that because, number one, it puts meat in the freezer potentially. But number two, I get to go out there with some friends that live in Montana, and I get to learn from them, and I get to see the land in Montana, so that when I do draw a bull elk tag in Montana, I feel comfortable. I know where to go. I know how to hunt there. And I'm really excited about it, but it is a slow accumulation of not only preference points, but skills and drills.
Oh no, it's all experience, right? I was actually fortunate enough to I just came back from Southern Colorado this past weekend, in which I killed a cow elk.
Congrats.
And And what you don't know about killing a cow elk is that you probably going to need to buy another freezer.
Yep.
Because you don't actually know how big those animals are.
Yep.
Like 325, 330 dressed. I was just like, holy smokes, man. I think one cow went like 375
wow.
dressed. I was like, that's this monstrous amount of meat. I had to get rid of the ice cream freezer last year from my wife. My wife was like, what are you doing? Why is the ice cream in this freezer? I was like, I'm filling every single freezer full of meat. And then realized I was out of space. And so I had to buy a new freezer.
Yep. We just experienced the same thing. So we have we shot an elk in first season rifle and in Colorado and filled the freezer. You know, I paid out my two buddies that helped me pack it out. And I think the weight coming back from the butcher was 242. So it was a big elk. And like I said, we're going out to Montana in January. So that second freezer that we have set up for our ice blocks for my
right.
ice bath, I'm gonna have to clear those out and put the elk in there.
Matt, what are your firefighter friends saying about hunting? Are they hunters? Do you distribute the meat? What are their reactions to this?
Yeah, so the guys I work with, hunting is a way of life. Before I went hunting with Shane, before I really started asking questions, I would notice that every, you know, March and April, guys would sit around the table with their new brochure from Colorado State.
Mm-hmm.
That talks about the areas, and then they do their research into how many points for each area. And I would, of course, listen, but have no idea really what they're talking about. And, you know, I always took some interest in it, but it seemed like an overwhelming task to learn the process of applying for big game tags in Colorado. But, you know, after kind of, you know, breaking the floodgates and going hunting a couple times, the guys I work with, it's something that we share together. You know, when the brochure comes out, we all sit down and talk about what we're doing this year, what the plans are. We start looking on Go Hunt Insider and all that stuff for what point requirements are for each area. Can we head out of state yet? You know, can I go to Wyoming with 5 points for elk, pronghorn, or deer? Stuff like that. So it's a really exciting time for the hunters at the fire department.
Do you interact with, obviously you're still, I would envision you're still involved in the CrossFit community in some sense of the word. Are there people that are, you know, do you give the meat away, give the elk away, give people like, hey, here's some venison that I shot or killed?
No, we do that at work. as far as working out with people, I work out in my garage, you know.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I think there were so many years where we were so yeah. immersed into the community that when I stopped working for CrossFit Incorporated and when I stopped owning a gym and I sold the gym, it was nice to just work out by myself in my
there
garage. Yeah. But yeah, absolutely. We do. I do bring meat into the fire department. We cook a roast or whatever on the slow cooker. We'll do, you know, obviously ground meat all the time. Maybe keep the back straps at home.
Keep the good stuff.
Yeah.
Matt, what about, so I want to dive in a little bit to this whole, you know, when you, and maybe let's just start with you and we can migrate into what you know, is happening on Rich's Instagram right now, but just generally maybe sort of like larger influencer type. Yeah. People that are talking about hunting writ large. 10 years ago, you decide, okay, I'm going to be a hunter. 10 years ago, you're still very much in CrossFit, right?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Is there a point there that you're just like, did you make a conscious decision one way or another to say, are you going to communicate about hunting? Am I not going to communicate about hunting? Am I going to post about hunting? Am I going to get canceled? What's going to happen? Talk me through that.
Yeah. So, like you're describing with Rich and his boar that he shot, you know, my first experience with social media and the backlash from social media, occurred in 2013. I shot a mule deer archery, and you know, it was a forky, but it was my first velvet forky that I'd ever shot, and I was super proud about it. Field dressed it, you know, by myself with a buddy, of course, and you know, brought it back to the house and kind of learned the process of, you know, having an animal butchered, and I was super excited. So of course, you know, I took a picture with my harvest, and you know, I'm smiling because I'm happy. And I posted that photo to Instagram back in like 2013, and the backlash was not what I expected. I would have thought that, you know, primarily my audience is CrossFitters generally or firefighters, that there would be a lot of support for finding a way to ethically harvest grass-fed, free-range, good life animals for your meat, to take into your body, to turn it into the proteins that make up your structure. I would have thought that'd be more respected, more something that people would look at and say, I want to do that. And that is definitely not the case. So I don't have 1.4 million followers like Rich does. I watched my social media following go down by the tens of thousands after that post, and it was like, okay, well, I guess I can't afford to do that again. But yeah, I learned about it, man, and what I've learned is that the way to do that now for me is to post a nice picture, wearing camo and all that stuff on the first slide of a group of photos, and say, if you're triggered by seeing dead animals, please do not slide to the left because there is a photo of my harvest. And at the very least, you're warning people so that you're not pushing it into their face. So that's how I approach it.
Yeah, and look, I'm totally a fan. I actually just was talking about this earlier today. You know, people will look at trophy pictures and they'll be like, you know, Robbie, what's your take on a trophy picture? Does it help or hurt hunting? Now, my answer is it depends. If it's just by itself and there's no cleanup and it's guts and gore and blood and whatnot, and it doesn't show us in the light that we should be showing ourselves in.
Hit it.
It doesn't show respect for the animal. It doesn't show actually the entire process.
Right.
All it shows is Matt Chan, Rich Ronan smiling over a dead animal.
Right.
And the immediate connotation is, oh, you're smiling because you enjoyed killing that animal.
Yes. Agreed.
And it's like, yes, I see that. I get it. But the smile, honestly, is not from the kill. Because if you dived from a theological perspective and philosophical perspective, and you spoke with 100 hunters, you surveyed 100 hunters, immediately after the shot is taken, whether it's with a bow or a rifle, and something happens to that animal, whether it drops and it kicks or it runs away or it does something psychologically in our brains, and again, I'll put money on the fact that it's 99 out of 100 hunters, there's some sort of like remorse, gut anxiety, you know, stomach sickness kind of thing within you.
Yep.
And you have to ask the question, why? Like, why do you get that? And you get that because you didn't enjoy seeing that animal act the way it did after you trying to ethically take its life.
Yeah.
It's part of the human psyche. So, you know, the idea of this idea that we purport to love the animals that we take, that we purport to love the animals that we kill, is a very difficult concept to translate over social media, even more difficult when it's a single picture with a single person spot.
Yeah, man, I couldn't agree more. Like, I respect every one of those animals, what they endure throughout their lifetime, both from hunting pressure, but also just from the environment that they live in throughout the year. It's amazing. And that feeling that you're describing, I experienced that with this last animal I harvested, that I took the first shot and this old bull just stood there like nothing ever happened to him. I shot it from 365 yards and I thought, oh, you know, that wasn't a good shot. And right, like what you're describing was, here comes the nerves, here comes the regret, here comes the grief of potentially wounding an animal. I quickly reloaded another round, shot it in the exact same spot, and it walked off. And I watched, this is funny, so it walked out of view behind some trees, and I actually saw a moose pop up out of some willows and stare in that direction. And while I was thinking that elk is walking away, I just wounded it. I watched that moose stare in that direction for 20 minutes. So I knew that that elk was still there and that it was going down. But until I saw, put eyes on that elk in the field and that it had it expired, the whole time it was just, man, I hope I didn't mess that up.
Yeah, you know? Sickness to your stomach.
Yeah, and people don't get to see that. They don't understand that the minute you fire your weapon, it's a countdown until you see that you actually completed the task. And
yeah,
luckily enough, you know, in this occasion, both shots were good shots, and it just took a second for the animal to expire. So, it is a huge relief. I have had it go the other direction where you do take a shot and the animal disappears and it's you're tracking blood in the middle of the night and you're like, it's a countdown. It's a countdown. And every second you're hating yourself for not showing more restraint for a better shot or another opportunity. And luckily, you know, I've never not found an animal that I took a shot at. But boy, oh boy. It is a stressful part of hunting.
Yeah, the cow elk that I shot 2 or 3 days ago, 225 on a super steep side slope and downhill on a tripod that was not a good tripod. Felt like I was good. She was quartering to me. Felt like I was in a good spot for the trigger pull. Good trigger pull. I'm shooting suppressed. So I hear the slap, but immediately she walks off and I'm like,
yep.
Oh man, I pulled it, right? I pulled it right because I'm on a right down side slope. And I'm even in the video, you can hear me, just personal video, you can hear me just start swearing. Like I messed up. And then when we got to the place where she walked off, it's just like pinpricks of blood. And I'm like, oh, this is not good. Like, we're going to track this for 200, 300 yards, and the blood's going to disappear.
Yeah.
And the guy that was with me looked at it, and he said to me afterwards, he's like, when I saw the blood, I was like, oh, this is not good too.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to vocalize it. But she was dead 15 yards away.
Yeah, it's a good feeling.
And was perfect, perfect, perfect shooting. And it was a great feeling. And it's just like this, again, you take that sort of stress and anxiety and sickness, and when you see the animal for the first time, there's just this monstrous weight that gets lifted off you.
Yep.
And again, psychologically, like, what is that? Is that, that has to mean, again, you know, some theologist is going to, I need to break it down, but what does that mean? Like, subconsciously, from a human perspective, I would assume that it means that we loved that animal, that we wanted it to, you know, we wanted it to be as ethical as we possibly can. We really, you know, did not want to put it through any more pain,
yeah,
any more, you know, be as humane as we possibly can. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it feels a lot like, you know, being ready for your job or being ready for a CrossFit competition, honestly. Like, you know, there was times in the past where, you know, I wasn't training as hard as I should have been for a competition. For example, you know, one of the last competitions I did before I kind of retired, I guess, was Wadapalooza down in Miami, Florida. And I wasn't in the greatest shape. I had just come back from an injury. I was easing into it. And when I stood there for the first event of the weekend with the group of people that I was, you know, in the same heat with, I felt unprepared. I felt like I had made a mistake. I had felt bad that I'm going to, you know, that I'm not respecting the competition, that I'm not respecting the audience by giving my best. It's a similar feeling. And it's the same is true for my job. Like, If I get tasked with doing something on my job where lives are at stake and I'm not prepared for that job, it shows, number one. And number two, it's an embarrassment. You're not respecting the job. So this is very similar, where you're not respecting the animal if you're not prepared, if you haven't done the legwork, if you don't consider your shots, all of that stuff.
Yeah, no, it's totally true. Totally true. So you killed a bull this year.
Yep.
I saw you went for a hike first, though. You took your bow for a hike first, right?
Yeah. So I had a knee problem this year. I trying to rehab a torn meniscus. So I did not buy an archery season elk tag in Colorado. I kind of held back on that. I needed a little bit more time before I was comfortable carrying out a heavy animal just in case. So I bought a deer tag, and I have some spots in kind of the area where I normally hunt. And I was able to harvest a mule deer on the last day of season and got to test out my knee. And it was a beautiful month. I got to spend probably 10 to 15 days in the backcountry, some days by myself, some days with my wife, some days with friends. And,
cool.
And it was great, man. I'm glad that whole thing came together on the last day. I shot a doe at 67 yards, and it was awesome shot. It was downhill, 67 yards, and she made it like 25 yards before she expired, and it was
piled up. Yeah.
Also very, you know, as far as you know, antlers and stuff like that. Like, don't get me wrong, if I've got either sex tag, I'm waiting for bucks generally, but last day of the season, you know, can't eat the antlers.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. No, it's funny. You talk about that. A friend of mine who's a firefighter in Salt Lake City says that they accumulate all their vacation days and whatnot, and they're like literally just like take off the whole month of September. Like, we're out.
Yep.
We'll see you in October.
Yeah, you would think it's like Christmas and the holidays and all that where people are fighting for the days off, but it's like all of September and the second 2 weeks of October.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. So today you're okay, comfortable posting about hunting. Are you still getting some backlash?
Yeah. I think every time I post about something, I certainly get direct messages, or if I'll post to my like reels or whatever, where it stays on the carousel of here's my posts, people will definitely comment and be pretty rude about stuff. But generally, you know, if you show them respect as well, that
100%.
That they don't want to see that potentially, and you warn them that if you are triggered by this, please do not click the next story, or please don't slide to the left because you will see a dead animal. I think it's a respectful way to accommodate people. And, you know, the biggest issues I've had lately are not with social media. It's actually been hunting in areas where there are hiking trails and having those interactions. Yeah, with hikers, especially, you know, in the Front Range part of Colorado, if any of the hunters out there know. I mean, if you're hunting north of I-70, basically Golden all the way up to like Estes Park, there's a lot of foot traffic in those areas. And generally those people they're not necessarily anti-hunting, but they certainly react poorly from time to time, whether they realize it or not.
Can you give us an example of some of the interactions you've had?
Yeah, the worst one was last Thanksgiving. My wife and I both had mule deer tags for, I think it was fourth season rifle. And we were in an area that it's national forest, and there is a closure because proximity to homes, neighborhood. But we knew exactly where that was because we used to live in this area, where the restricted area was and where the national forest with hunting access was. And though we had to walk through national forest that was restricted, we were hunting in another area and we had cams set up and we were all set. I was catching all sorts of great mule deer on these cameras. And we go up there on Thanksgiving, first day of the season. And my wife and I are putting our clothes on at dawn.
This is at the trailhead already.
At the trailhead. And trucks parked there, campers on the back of it. And as we're standing there putting on our clothes, guy walks by with two of his dogs. And, you know, he walks, he's coming from the trail and he's walking back to his house. And as he walks by, he walked by and didn't say anything. And he made it about 50 yards past us, stopped and took his dogs off the leash and walked back towards us. And right away, he had a different demeanor than what he walked by at first. And it's like he thought about it and something upset him. And so we're standing there, and this is my wife's first year of hunting, of having a tag in her pocket. And he walks back and he tells us, you know, that this is a restricted area and that we have no business being here. And I said, I understand, sir. You know, I used to live in this area. I know where their hunting restricted areas are. We're actually going to hunt outside of those areas. And he asked me to show him on a map where we're going. So I did, of course. And, you know, it shows how Onyx shows the restricted area. I showed him where my trail cams were. So the guy basically yelled at us for about 5 minutes and took pictures of us and the area. He's holding his phone at us and whatever. But he proceeded to go up the trail system again and started making loud noises and being a buffoon, basically. And my wife is upset. And she had said that, you know, she's like, are we doing something wrong? Right? And she doesn't know that, you know, this is...
Well, you have to, you question it immediately. In any interaction, right? That person, you're like, is he right or am I right?
Right. Even I had the same feeling myself. I knew exactly what I was doing. And so, you know, I assured her that everything was cool. So we go up there. We walk to our little spot. There's the trail camera sitting right there. And the guy, about 30 minutes later, he comes up off of trail, walks past us. He's like, oh, there you are. There you are. And starts making a buffoon of himself for the next hour and just shouting, I hope I'm not scaring off the deer. And that was our first experience with real negative interaction. So we reported that to the Colorado Division of Wildlife, and nothing was done about it. You know, they said that they've had interactions with this guy before. So I did my part. The problem is,
I wonder what the laws are for. I would say it's almost like public harassment.
It is public harassment. So we did some research into it, and it is illegal to prevent a hunter from harvesting an animal. But it sounds to me like it's something that doesn't have good enforcement, especially in the area where we were at.
Yeah.
So we saw that the Colorado guys out there, and not a lot was done. So we just don't hunt in that area anymore. But we've experienced similar things just with human interaction on trails where we're walking by people and my wife will say something to me. She's like, these people just don't know how they look at you when you walk by. They look at you with disgust. And it's like...
And they're going to go back and get a McDonald's burger on the way home between the trailhead and where they live.
Well, there's that. And then there's also the fact that we're doing the exact same thing that they are, which is enjoying public lands on trail and off of trail. Only we're dressed different and carrying weapons that we may or may not use.
Yep.
So I look at it like a tree. They just don't understand. My wife's name is Shree. They just don't understand. And I'm sure if we spent time with these people and they experienced what we experience, they would probably grow to love this idea, this concept.
Well, and that's why Blood Origins exists.
Yes, exactly.
You know, that's why we do what we do. We just communicate to the non-hunter majority, you know, and, you know, a post like Rich's, and luckily I have a relationship with Rich. I was like, Rich, I'm going to comment, pin my comment, because then they'll see you, they react like immediately, like, oh my God, this is ridiculous. I just screenshot a woman's reaction. I'll actually read it right now. And it's this is why we do what we do. She goes to this post, and that's why I told Rich, I said, pin my post. He says, just wanted to say thanks for this comment from someone who saw this post and was immediately annoyed. annoyed because I find killing when it's not necessary, a necessity, disturbing. And if we're not being honest, killing things is not a necessity for Rich Front. But I read your comment and it reminded me about the same situation certain areas face with deer population. Those populations will have to be controlled one way or another. I do love the idea that when it's killed, it's consumed, provides nourishment rather than being killed for sport or straight wasted with the consequence of ecological imbalance. So thanks for this.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good. That's a good comment. Honestly, she stated.
Well, it's what it's the reaction you're looking for, and you know, again, if Blood Origins doesn't exist, those kinds of things.
Oh, was that your comment? Happen.
I posted a comment.
Okay.
That is pinned on Rich's post, which is something along the lines of, "Yeah, let me see if I can get it. My post is full of it right now." My comment was bears like wolves elicit huge reactions from people who think one, they are cute and cuddly, two, they are endangered, and three, nobody eats bears.
Right, I read this one.
So here's some facts. Yes, they're incredible creatures. There are also predators that have impacts on deer, elk, moose, calf, survival, and mortality, and as such requires some of the management. Black bears are one of the most prevalent species in North America behind white-tailed deer, especially prevalent in Colorado, around 20,000 bears. Three, bear meat is consumed all the time, is nutritious and delicious, and has to, by law, be taken off the mountain.
Right.
At the end of the day, I get you being upset, but sustainable management of black bears is a necessary activity.
Yeah, and couldn't say it better. And honestly, I feel like the person's reaction to that is a respectful reaction.
100%.
Yeah, where they said, you know, hey, this irks me, this makes me kind of nauseated, but I understand it, and... It's a great point. If we do let the deer population, for example, grow to a point where, you know, this chronic wasting disease affects all of the population of Colorado mule deer, there's a bigger problem at hand.
Mm-hmm. Or, you know, vehicle collisions, right? And people are like, well, I'm sick and tired of my car getting hit by a deer.
Yep.
CPW, come out.
Yeah, anyone that's...
We need to take care of this population.
Anyone that's driven out around Montrose, you know... I've never seen so many deer near collisions in my life driving around Montrose, Colorado. The same is true with elk in Estes Park. Unbelievable amount of elk on the streets of Estes Park. The interactions that you can have in that town, you're 10 feet from bull elk that are 6 or 7 points. I mean, it's crazy. So
crazy.
Management is important.
No, I think respect. Is the number one key thing here. And I totally agree with you. We will always be respectful in our responses and in our comments to people. And we'll also be honest. And honesty is a little bit disarming in the social media space, i.e., yes, you're right. It's a terrible picture. I agree with you. But let's just talk about something else. Or, hey, I get why you're upset. I get that you actually hate hunting. I get it. And you're allowed to have that opinion. But here's why this person's hunting. Well, this is why elephant hunting isn't atrocious. Here's the benefits to that person that you've never met before that has nothing, who hasn't had a piece of protein in 3 months, and this is the first piece of protein they get.
Well, you know, I'll say what I learned from my experience with the gentleman, which, by the way, this was not a... This was not an uneducated gentleman. He was a doc. He's a medical doctor. Was that you do. You have to take the high road. You have to treat the person with respect, even if they're not treating you with respect, and always back down from a fight. You know, it's like a physical fight. There's always ways out of it if you just take the high road. Walk away, express your point, and then walk away respectfully. And that's what I learned from that. And, you know, I was just as triggered as I'm sure he was, because I saw the look on my wife's eye, on her face, that she thought we were doing something wrong. He did not want to hunt the rest of that, even though she was holding a tag. He did not feel right hunting that year. And it was really disappointing, and I was angry. But I think just calming down and just accepting it for what it was the smartest thing I could do at that time. And I'm glad that was my reaction.
Yeah, 100%. That was a good reaction, man. I'm sure you've heard about the Colorado ballot initiative that's coming.
The wolves one or?
Oh, no, mountain lions.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Manlions, bobcats, and lynx. We've got a long road in front of us in Colorado. 13 months. 15 round fight. It's a long, long journey.
Yep.
But we can talk about that a little bit offline. Matt Chan, thank you, man.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, I really appreciate you. Well, that's it for today. Appreciate you listening, as always. Leave a review, share it with your friends, and most importantly, do what's right to convey the truth around hunting.